Now, when they had gone through Phrygia and the region of Galatia, they were forbidden by the Holy Spirit to preach the word in Asia. After they had come to Mysia, they tried to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit did not permit them. So passing by Mysia, they came down to Troas, and a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia stood and pleaded with him, saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." Now, after he had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go to Macedonia, concluding that the Lord had called us to preach the gospel to them. Therefore, sailing from Troas, we ran a straight course to Samothrace, and the next day came to Neapolis, and from there to Philippi, which is the foremost city of that part of Macedonia, a colony. And we were staying in that city for some days. And on the Sabbath day, we went out of the city to the riverside, where prayer was customarily made, and we sat down and spoke to the women who met there. Now a certain woman named Lydia heard us. She was a seller of purple from the city of Thyatira who worshipped God. The Lord opened her heart to hear the things spoken by Paul. And when she and her household were baptized, she begged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay." So she persuaded us. When you walk obediently to God in your life, what can you expect from God? Psalm 1 says, "All he does shall prosper well." Jesus said, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." But what that actually means in week-to-week and month-to-month experience, we need to look in the Scriptures to see how God actually carries that out. And I find Paul's experience and those with him instructive here in Acts chapter 16. Luke writes it in kind of a neutral way, but if I imagine being with Paul, I would have been somewhat frustrated long before I got to Philippi. We went through Phrygia and the region of Galatia. They wanted to go to Asia. Now, you need to know some geography here. Asia was a province of Asia Minor, and in present-day geography, it is the southwestern part of Turkey. And it was the location of the city of Ephesus, which was one of the major cities in the empire. And Paul's plan seems to have been to hit all the major cities one by one as he preached. His last desire being, of course, to go to the city of Rome and preach there. So later on, he did preach in Ephesus. But right now, in ways that we don't understand because Luke doesn't spell them out, the Holy Spirit said, "Not now for Asia, so you can't go to Ephesus at this point." So they continued traveling. They went up over a significant mountain range, and then they tried to go north into Bithynia. Now, Bithynia was the province in present-day northern Turkey, bordering on the Black Sea. And it would make good sense to go there. Later on, Peter writes his first letter to Christians who live in that part of the world. So the gospel did get there, but not this time and not with Paul. And how often the Scriptures say people make their plans and then God determines how they turn out. It is a theme of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 9, for example. "A man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps." Proverbs 19, verse 21. "There are many plans in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the Lord's counsel, that will stand." Proverbs 20, verse 24. "A man's steps are of the Lord. How then can a man understand his own way?" James says, you make your plans. You say you're going to go to another city. You're going to buy and sell. You're going to get rich. He says you ought to at least temper that by saying, if God wills, we will do so and so. Just as a sort of a recognition for all you people under 25. If you're under 25, raise your hand. Okay, so now you know who you are. All right, now I want you to watch. Everybody over 30, are you now doing in life what you expected to do when you were 22? Raise your hands. 3. How many of you are doing something different than you expected to do when you were 22? Were you mistaken to make those plans when you were 22? No, I don't think so. The scriptures always encourage us to plan and to look ahead, but we must do so with the humility to know that God often has other intentions and plans and directs our steps other than we intended. And that's true of Paul here. As a missionary, he made sensible plans to go to Ephesus, the next major city, on his way west. The Lord said, not now. Then he intended to go to Bithynia to the north, another major, highly densely populated area. And the Lord said no. So he just continued traveling. When things don't work out as we plan, we have to go on living anyway. If we try this, we end up doing that, and we have to do what comes to hand. And what came to Paul's hand was continue traveling. So he continued traveling, and Luke here in Acts gives us quite a detailed itinerary. He traveled by Mysia. They came down to Troas. There they stopped, because now they were at the end of the road, and it was water in front of them. And in Troas, God sent Paul a vision. And in the vision, a man from Macedonia was speaking, and he was saying, and Paul was the audience, come over to Macedonia and help us. One can read the literature of the ancient world by the first century, and this almost sounds like the ancient world's whole cry at this point. By the time Paul is traveling, the world of that part of the world has been at peace for over 60 years. There have been no wars, no civil wars, no enemy barbarian invasions. They've had peace. The U.S. has never known 60 years of peace. We've never gone that long without being involved in some significant war. 60 years, 70 years peace by the time Paul is making this journey. And the ancient world had a chance, you might say, almost to stop and look around and ask the question, so what is existence about? And you can read a deep pessimism in the first century in the pagan world, a deep pessimism, because by this time they know they don't know. They know they have no answers. They know they don't have an understanding of what happens after death. They have no understanding of really how they should live. There are different schools of philosophy, but they're beginning to lose their nerve and their confidence. And it's as though the whole pagan world is crying out with this man from Macedonia, come over and help us. The world's a puzzle and they can't put it together. It's a lock and they don't have the key. Their consciences are confused. Their consciences often condemn them. And they need help from God. They obeyed immediately. They got on a ship. They traveled on a straight course, Luke writes, from Troas by ship past Samothrace, which is an island there. They came to Neapolis, and then they come to Philippi. Philippi was the main city and one of the four Roman divisions of Macedonia at the time, and it was a Roman colony. The Romans, who did so many things right in order to put together an empire and then run it and keep it. One of the things they did was, after they'd had an army go however far it was from Rome and fight there and win its battles, they would often simply demobilize all these soldiers right there and give them land. And that's what Philippi was. Philippi was the city founded by the soldiers of Augustus and Antony. After they had beaten Brutus and Cassius in 40 BC in one of the Roman civil wars, the army was demobilized right there in Macedonia, and they said to the soldiers, here's your reward, you have this land, settle down. And these proud Roman soldiers settled then a little colony of Romans right there in Macedonia. So if the people of Macedonia were going to be tempted to rebel, one of the things they would have to deal with was a loyal Roman citizen's colony of Philippi right there in their midst. Luke here understands things, by the way, this is a little footnote on language. Luke understands so well what Philippi is that he doesn't use the ordinary Greek word for colony. He uses the Latin word for colony, because this is a Latin colony and settled by former Roman soldiers. It's a city where Roman laws, Roman customs, Roman citizenship prevailed. And as you go on in Romans, in Acts 16, you see very clearly how significant it is that this is a Roman colony. Now, if God gave you a vision and sent you someplace to preach, wouldn't you expect good things to come? So Paul preaches, and guess what happens, at least initially? Nothing. That's the next thing Luke tells us. We were staying in that city for some days, and there's no evidence of any successful preaching. The city had no synagogue. There was no natural place for him to go to preach. It sort of was like Lystra. Finally, just looking for some people to whom they might talk, on the Sabbath day, they went down to the riverside where I suppose they had found that there was a small group that met there for prayer. And who was there? Well, we sat down and we spoke to the women who met there. It has been observed more than once throughout history that when religious observance is at an ebb and people are not particularly spiritual as a population, that as often as not, it's among a small group of women that genuine spirituality survives. And that's the way it was in Philippi. There's no mention of any men here. It was women meeting there for prayers. Paul and those with him went. Do you notice all of a sudden how Luke writes with the word we? Luke probably joins with Paul and Timothy and Silas at this point in their journey. So there are now four in Paul's team, Paul and Silas, Timothy, whom he picked up in Lystra, and now Luke adds himself and speaks now as we are there. And while they were there, and he spoke, there was a certain woman named Lydia. Lydia was a businesswoman. She was from the city of Thyatira over on the other side of the Aegean Sea. She was settled there in Philippi. She was a worshiper of God. Quite possibly not Jewish, since she's not named as Jewish, but she's a worshiper of God who met with the few Jewish believers, those who were sincere Jews there in that city. And the Lord opened her heart to heed the things spoken by Paul. Back when I was in high school, and that's the age at which lots of Christians brought up in the church like this one begin to try to figure out the doctrine of predestination. How many of you adults, was it in high school that you started trying to figure that out? Was it just me? I was reading and pondering this, I remember to this verse. The Lord opened her heart to heed the things spoken by Paul. That does sound to me like irresistible grace. Otherwise, if the Lord hadn't worked in her heart, she would remain hard and resistant to the gospel. But the Lord opened her heart, and so she listened to those things that Paul had to preach. So she believed. She's the first believer in Philippi. We have, there's quite a science these days of church planting. And part of the science is looking for solid and stable families who can work with a church planter and establish a church someplace. And I don't want to say that all this isn't very good sense and good planning. I noticed that Philippi doesn't fit the model very well, does it? This is a church in which you have four men coming and preaching, and there's nobody there who's a believer when they arrive, and there's no synagogue to work with. And the first audience is all women, and the first believer is Lydia, a businesswoman, and has her own household attached to her, but she's obviously head of household. She believes. She's baptized. Her household is baptized with her. And then she says, If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay. So she persuaded us. So wherever it was that the four of them had been staying before while they were in Philippi, maybe out in the, simply outside overnight, now they come and they stay with Lydia in her household. She obviously has a sufficiently large house that she can have a place for all four of them to stay. I was inclined to say, note the benefits of a large house. You can have lots of hospitality if you have a large house. I wonder if the phrase here, she prevailed on us, indicates that she really had to work to persuade them. You know, Paul had the policy, if he preached someplace and there was very little response, he would move on. He was in Athens and preached and only a few people believed, and then he went on to Corinth. He may well have had the same temptation here in Philippi. I preached, only one person has believed in her house, time to move on. Lydia persuades them and says, no, stay here, stay with me, continue preaching in Philippi. We read Philippians the other week in our family worship, and as we picked up Philippians, I don't know whether it's Alex or Daniel, one of them says, we read Philippians pretty often, because we don't read straight through. We sort of do a chunk of this part of the Bible and another chunk of this part of the Bible. I said, yeah, I guess we do. It's the most cheerful of all Paul's letters. Of all the churches that Paul founded, the one that was most loyal and supportive and good to Paul was this church in Philippi. The one with the least hopeful beginning was the most supportive. They're the ones who sent him money. They're the ones who he doesn't have to write and warn them about this heresy or that heresy. They were not the ones divided. They weren't the ones saying, well, Paul was okay, but we got much better preachers now than we had with Paul. They are the ones who were the constant source of the most happiness and greatest joy for Paul as a missionary. I think of all the churches we read about in the New Testament, that's the church I'd have been happiest to be part of here in Philippi. Well, what happens when Paul and those with him walk obediently? Well, in this case, there was no immediate success, even though obeying was very much on Paul's mind. And then there was a small assurance from God that they were doing the right thing. Lydia believed, and she pressed them to stay with her there in Philippi. Behind all this, and maybe I should have made more of a point of this as I went through these verses, behind all this is a clear understanding in the Scriptures that behind the scenes, God is directing the advance and movement of His church through space and time. The Lord said, not Ephesus, not Bithynia, over to Philippi. And then there in Philippi, the Lord's at work. He opened Lydia's heart so that she would believe. This is what we count on as believers, as we pray and work in the world. The Lord is planning the outcomes long ahead of how things work out. And I think, as I've mentioned before, I think of the thousands of missionaries who went to China in the year 1900 and following, and the Lord had great plans for China. They didn't see it, but, and then I think now of people like, do you pray for them? Do you pray? You should be praying for them there in Yemen. Can you imagine working in Yemen year after year after year? You raise your children there. You see people believe. There's nobody for them to marry. There's constant pressure of an Islamic world that everybody knows there's they're ready to put the sword behind what they insist on. You are there sort of undercover, and you're there year after year. I'm impressed with the stamina the Lord has given to them. And I was delighted to see them again last summer and visit with them. You should be praying for them. The Lord sent them there to Yemen. He has plans for Yemen. They're not the first. They won't be the last. And as the Lord sent Paul to Philippi, and there were initially small beginnings. There will be something come out of Yemen in the decades to come. As I said this morning, I hope to live to see the Communist Party, which has got so much blood on its hands, gone in China. And I hope to see Yemen. I'd love to live long enough to see Yemen with openly established Christian churches bringing freedom to an enslaved people, enslaved to the deceit and lies of Muhammad. That's the hope that Paul brought to Philippi. Macedonian man saying, come over and help us. And they went over, and indeed they brought help. You ought to finish the chapter 16 sometime before the day's out and see the rest of the help that the Lord brought to Philippi through Paul and those with him. Please turn to Psalm 36.